Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, Not Trying to Pile On. This episode is sponsored by Linode and Digimark.
Amazing iOS developer Manton Reese.
Dun, 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 dun.
This week on Planet of Core Intuition. Who will survive? Who will go home with his app brokenhearted?
I am now 30 seconds into my pitch, going down an escalator. Tell you why you should microblog and not use Twitter. I don't know. What am I going to say?
Too late. I'm out.
Oh my gosh. Well, so we're joking and talking about the Planet of the Apps trailer that just hit this week. So I expected like a reality TV show. I expected some of this. I didn't expect it to be quite as close to like Shark Tank plus The Voice plus Apple as it looks like it is.
Yeah,
but I expected some of this. There's a lot. I don't know. There's a lot. It's interesting here, and like the pitch part, especially. There's more gimmicks and more drama than I was expecting for some reason. I don't know. Were you expecting the escalator? Were you expecting the? And it's not in the trailer, but it's. He also Ben Silverman, who was at the Code conference, that was talking about this. Who was one of the first people to kind of come up with the idea for the show and pitch it, talked about how when the app developer has 60 seconds to do their initial pitch, and then they literally swipe left or right on their phone or tablet to say whether you get a chance to have a longer time to tell us why your app is great. And that stuff just, is that really necessary? Swiping left and right?
It's cheesy, right? It's terrible, cheesy. Right? It's formulaic terrible. Or whatever. I think you're right. It's gimmicky.
Gimmicky.
The reaction to this seems to be like 90% of people I know saying, "Oh my God, this is the cheesiest looking thing ever. It's so beneath Apple." And then like maybe 10% of people I know saying, "What did you expect? It's a reality show." And I think my sort of takeaway is, I also did not expect it to be as formulaic, as cheesy seeming, as sort of like, I guess like, it's just sort of like base. It's basic. It's basic and it's, you know, and it's like adherence to the formulaic show model for what they're doing. And I think what people who just say, well, this is reality show, what do you expect? It's like, it is exactly what I expect if Apple's name isn't on it.
Exactly.
And it's like, you know, we have come to expect that Apple only does things when they feel that they can add value, that they can fill in some gap that was missing, when their take on a problem is clever, or you know, they can put a lot of investment into one particular nuance of a thing. You know, they did this with things like the iPod, where it was like, oh wow, they really, you know, 1,000 songs in your pocket, that was kind of like a big deal. And if they had just come out with like a Rio or whatever, then everyone was just like, well, that's pretty dumb, that's just like a Rio or a whatever the other, you know, MP3 players at the time were. It wouldn't have been a reasonable defense to say, well, what do you expect? That's what MP3 players are. They're dumb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I want to go into a little more of the structure of the show because I think it's interesting and I have some hope for it too. I will watch it and hopefully some of the parts that I think might work well in the show will end up working well. But to talk about your point here with like, we expected more from Apple. As I was listening to Eddie Q talk about this, yesterday, I was also thinking, like, we don't exactly know how this played out. We know that they had this idea for the show, not Apple, the kind of original producer of the show had this idea. They shopped it around to like major television networks, and then they were talking to Apple, and Apple showed interest, and so they like Apple would be perfect for this. But what I'm also curious about is, was Apple like, this is a great idea, we want to help you with it, or were they also like, this is going to be terrible. Like, this is going to be, like, maybe not terrible, but, like, we almost need to do damage control here because, like, this is the app ecosystem. This is our thing. If you take this show and run with it and maybe you have Android on it or maybe you just don't do a good job, like, highlighting the good parts about developers and indie developers, like maybe we do need to step in and make sure this is done right. And of course we all have different definitions of right, but like I do kind of wonder if they felt like they needed to be part of this just so that it's not a disaster. I'm totally making this up, but
it's, so you're sort of you're persisting in the possibly vain hope that despite the cheesiness of the trailer and indications that it's like basic and formulaic, that it's gonna pull something together and it's gonna be worth watching and it's gonna prove itself possibly in the actual, you know, elaboration of the show.
Well, that's kind of a naive hope, but more than that, I'm thinking it could have been worse. And I think that they were right to partner with Apple, because if they had just gone to like ABC or something and done the show, it wouldn't have had, well, first of all, it would have been harder to find developers that would be interested in being on the show. And it wouldn't have had kind of the legitimacy, you know, of, you know, you win the show, quote unquote. And of course, anyone can give you VC funding and whatnot, but only Apple can feature you in the App Store. Like, I feel like this show is kind of right for Apple, even though it feels like very strange show to put on Apple Music, that maybe this is the best we could hope for. This show is going to be produced by someone. Mm-hmm. Let's just be thankful that Apple's involved.
That's a very optimistic take, Manton. You're Mr. Optimism in the house.
Well, let me tell you all the bad things about it now. Like, the escalator thing I cannot get over, because so elevator pitch, it's a common phrase. You know, you're in the elevator with someone, you just have a few seconds to like tell them your great idea and sell them on it before, you know, you get up to whatever floor you're going to and it's over. Like, if you can't do an actual elevator of some kind on the show, forget it. Like, throw that idea out, because it just seems completely bizarre to have the escalator instead of an elevator. It's almost like, I don't know. And again, getting back to Apple, like, Apple doesn't usually, like, if they have to compromise like that, yeah, like, we have a great idea for this. We're going to compromise and do it kind of like just a half, like, poorly done job at it. They say, forget it. We're just going to scrap the feature if we can't do it right. And I feel like they should have done that with this. Like, if you can't have an elevator with your panel of judges, forget it. The escalator, it just seems ridiculous. It really distracts. If there's anything good about the show, those little gimmicks, I don't think that's going to work. I think that's going to be just ridiculous.
I think there's a real key point here is how much of this is Apple's name is on it versus how much of this is Apple actually had any say in how it was structured, you know, fine tuning it from an aesthetic point of view, from an emotional point of view. And it could just be, this is like the TV show version of like a Motorola rocker phone, you know?
Yeah.
And I think anybody, even at the time that the rocker was announced, it was like, kind of like, I hope this isn't revisionist memory on my part, but I think I remember just being like, this is it. Like, this is Apple's phone.
In that announcement, you could almost see on Steve Jobs's his face, it's like,
yeah,
he wasn't thrilled with what he was showing off. And there might be a little bit of that with Eddie Q too, in the code conference. Like, yeah, he said all the right things, but I'm not sure he was that excited about the show. From Apple's perspective, this is an experiment. Mm-hmm. You know, they're helping produce it. They want it done right. They are excited about opportunity of exclusive video in Apple Music. But I mean, if it flops, I don't think Apple's going to be committed to keeping this going for 5 seasons.
Right. You know, the thing that's missing to me, so I am not a huge fan of reality TV shows in general. So I think that's probably true for a lot of our friends who are criticizing this too. It's like, you know,
yeah,
I get it. Like, I know other people who are like really into the Bachelor type shows. There's so kind of a way to get into them because you embrace the cheesiness of it and the sort of like, the like sort of like grossness of this competition for, you know, this ruthlessness. And the quote unquote reality shows that I have really enjoyed, 2 shows come to mind. One of them is The Great British baking show.
Oh yeah. That's you really ever see good. That? Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. We've watched so that the distinctive thing about that is it gets at a lot of, and I think this is coming up for me because, you know, I'm off the cuff, I said something about it, the emotional aspect of the show, and you know, how much input did Apple have into that? And because we know Apple is a humane company, they are interested in the humanity of things and of, you know, of stories of, therefore they should be interested in the humanity of a show that is dedicated to, you know, to kind of like celebrating the creation of apps. So the Great British Bake Off is incredibly humane and dedicated to the craft of baking. And one of the great things about that show is even though everybody is in competition with one another, they are often helping each other and they are, you know, acting in praise of one another, in awe and in in praising others' work. Another show that comes to mind, so that's a British show. Another show that comes to mind, though, is Project Runway. You ever watched that?
Nope, haven't watched that one.
So this is a show that I've possibly become an unlikely fan of. The reason I'm a fan of it is because it also elevates this idea of like of a hobby slash profession of making clothes into a reality competition. But it has that same kind of, you know, definitely not as, it's not as touchy-feely nice as the baking show, but there is a kind of camaraderie among the competitors that is encouraged by the hosts, you know, the judges. And to me, that makes it a great show because you can get into the idea of these people, these individuals, you know, the same thing with the baking show, individuals who have a passion for making things, and that passion is being pushed to stretch their, you know, to stretch the limits of their capabilities by judges who show genuine care for them. And at least right. from the trailer for Planet of the Apps, to my eye, it was made, it presents the show as a confrontation between competitors and judges.
Right.
And that's like not a, it's not really a fun, well, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people will find that fun, but to me, it would be a better show if it were that same type of celebrating the earnest desire to do great work and to be pushed by judges who might be tough on you, but are nonetheless sort of like empathetic with you.
Right.
And if it showed more of that, I would be more excited about the show.
Right. And so a couple of things. First of all, you've absolutely nailed the problem by pointing out how great the British baking show is. And it's such a missed opportunity on the show. You can tell already, no matter what the show ends up looking like, it's not going to have the high quality that something like the British baking show does in terms of like actually celebrating app development, getting into the details. Like, I don't know that much about baking, but I can watch that show and learn a bunch, right? And kind of feel people's passion and stories and techniques. And I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff that kind of surfaces in a show like that. And it's possible that some of that will happen in Planet of the Apps, in the sort of, because there's two kind of phases to the show. And this is my other big problem with what we've seen so far, is there's the pitch session where it's like, do you even have a chance to tell the judges that you have a good idea? And then they pick you or you pick them if there's multiple people interested in your idea. And this is kind of the voice ripoff. And then there's the second phase where you actually work on your app, right? And then that's more competition between the different developers. And it's that second phase that's potentially really interesting, where this is the actual work. This is like you're sitting down to build your app and work with designers and eventually, you know, try to get other venture capitalists interested. And I mean, that's interesting. And if that was done with the same care and attention as the Great British Baking Show, man, that would be really good.
Yeah.
And I think it would be good, not just for app developers who already know this stuff, but good for anyone who uses an iPhone and is kind of interested in the in this process. That would be a really, really good show. But again, that's part of it, and we don't know how big a part of the show that is. The pitch is such a ripoff of like the worst parts of Shark Tank, and I just can't really get over that. And I'm not just trying to pile on and say this is a terrible idea because I hate reality TV shows, but I mean, just look at it. Like, someone's coming down the escalator, and then you swipe to just discard them off the show right away. It's just terrible. It's kind of mean-spirited. It's making fun of certain developers because they're gonna. Let's say they have 30 developers or whatever. Like, 28 are going to make it past the escalator and two are not. And those two, they're going to have terrible ideas that everyone's going to laugh at.
Yep.
It's just, that's not the kind of show we need. No. I don't think it really helps Apple either.
And it plays to, frankly, it plays to a reality for development and financing app development that is counter to the humanity angle that Apple should be promoting. The whole idea behind Apple's App Store, the way they've pushed it, the way they've emphasized it to developers is anybody can build an app. Anybody who has $100 can pay Apple for the privilege of putting that app in the App Store.
Right.
This whole notion that app development has to occur through a pitch session with venture capitalists who then, you know, grace you with the privilege of developing your app by giving you money is counter to the emotional story that Apple should be telling, which is if somebody doesn't like your quote-unquote escalator pitch, you just go build the app anyway, you know? You build the app anyway. That nobody can swipe you off your idea for building an app. And I get that it would be hard to come up with a contrived, you know, I shouldn't say that. It shouldn't be that hard.
That's not, I mean, if
you
can come,
yeah,
if you skip that first part of the show and you still have a show. Hundreds of developers applied to be on this thing, right? And good luck to them, because I don't have the courage to be on a show like this knowing that in editing and in post-production, they're going to make me look, they're going to take all the worst parts of me, right? And show them. And they're going to tell you, know, I have no control over how I'm perceived on this show. And that's just reality TV. That's what they do. You kind of fall in love with certain characters. You hate certain characters, where in real life, that might not be like that, because you're seeing a kind of narrow part of who they are to play into the narrative and the storyline of the show. So I wouldn't want to do this. So, you know, if you want to be on the show and you're on it, good luck. That's, you know, you're taking a risk, kind of, but it's also, there could be a payoff. It could be cool. But anyway, my point is, all these people, they had a lot of people that wanted to be on the show and they didn't pick all of them. I think a better approach would have been just pick the 30 best people. Like, the application process that was private, that's the pitch. Pick the 30 best and then let them compete on the show. Don't pick 50 knowing that 10 are terrible. Like, pick the best and then let them all be on the show. And then maybe some are voted off or whatever later. I don't know. But like, I just really disagree with this initial escalator swiping. You're not getting the green button pressed. You're off the show. That is unnecessary. Leave that for the private application process.
Yeah. And comparing it again to the baking show, what's great is everybody on that show has different ideas about how to bake something well. And the judges sometimes playfully say, like, you really think that's the best way to do this? Like, okay, well, we'll see how that works out for you. And then sometimes the bakers surprise the judges. And it could be the same thing on this show. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to, or supporting what you say, they could have just picked the 30 quote unquote best, but also they could just pick the 30 most representative or most interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have some people on the show who are like unlikely app builders.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it would still be an interesting show.
Right.
It would still be like, well, you really think that's the way to do it? Okay, we'll see what you can do.
Yeah. Prove us wrong. Yeah. Yeah. I think that would have been a better show. Of course, we haven't seen it yet, but we've seen enough, I think, to judge the premise, and it's a missed opportunity for sure. I'll watch it because I think it will be interesting and entertaining. And I'm hoping that that kind of second phase of the show, when they're getting down to actually building their apps, I'm hoping there will be things in that that will be interesting and worthwhile. But it's a shame that it looks like it does. It really, I think it could have been a lot better.
All right, folks, we are happy to have back sponsoring the show again, our friends at Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the backend for your latest iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. Linode has been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003. They give their customers free upgrades, and they have 8 global data centers equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs. Now, if you're using a shared hosting plan somewhere, you might be thinking, whoa, something fancy like Linode, that's a little bit too fancy for me. But listen, you get full root access. So you have full control of your VMs, your containers, everything. You get clear, precise hourly billing with a monthly pricing cap. And they have add-ons for load balancing, system metrics, and backups. All of this comes with 24/7 support. And they're really aiming this at our audience, offering a special promo code. You get $20 off with the promo code CoreInt2017. So this is really, Linode is great for pretty much everybody, from the low-end hosting needs to the high-end. And you can learn all about it at linode.com/CoreInt.
Yeah, I've been using Linode for a long time now. And one of the things I love about them is that their plans are just really straightforward, but they're always improving them. And usually, you know, a year will go by or whatever, and they'll make an improvement. They'll give you more memory or more disk or something, and you can just go in and upgrade your Linode instance, and you're not paying any more, and you know, you've got more features. And they've done that this week. They've rolled out actually two really, really big changes. The first is they've added a $5 a month plan. So this is the cheapest they've ever had anything. You get a gigabyte of RAM, getting started, just $5, your own Linode instance, everything that Linode has to offer. It's super great. If you just need to start simply, or you're just experimenting, or you need a dev server or something for testing, $5 is obviously really cheap. And they've also added a whole new series of these high memory plans. And I'm really excited about this because, like I said, the Linode plans are really simple. So you say, I want this much memory, you know, this, and it comes with this much disk and this, these many cores on your processor. But every once in a while, you have a need on an app server where you do need actually a lot of memory, and you don't really care how much disk space you have, for example. And so they have like this other series of plans, and you can switch back and forth between them. If you're already using Linode and you need more memory and you don't want to pay more, you can switch to one of these high memory plans. So I think it's going to be great for me personally, because I do have some of these servers, things like running Redis, which is an in-memory database. I don't really care how much disk space there is, but I care a lot about the memory. And so I can actually save some money by transferring to one of these plans. So even more plans, even more flexible. And of course, that $5 a month, if you just want to get started, you can use coupon CoreInt2017 to save $20. And so try that $5 a month plan. That's 4 months free of Linode. So check it out. Really happy to have them as a sponsor. It's linode.com/CoreInt, and the coupon is CoreInt2017. All right, so Daniel, we're talking about Planet of the Apps. One thing we didn't really touch on yet that I think is interesting is the panel of judges. 4 judges, and there you do the initial kind of pitch to your idea too, and then they help you later as advisors, kind of guiding you through the process of making your app and kind of getting your business up and going. So what do you think about the judge? I mean, I personally don't really have any problems with the judges. I think, although it would be kind of interesting to have a judge that was just like me or you or like some normal like app developer.
Yeah.
I think that the judges will be, I think they're good. I think it's a good fit for this type of show. Someone, you know, has a lot of energy, kind of interesting, different personalities. Like, I really don't have any problem with the judges. And like Gary Vaynerchuk, I think, is a perfect fit for this kind of show. I've been following him for a long time. And he's actually like, so he does a daily YouTube vlog now where someone just follows them around and films everything and they edit it. And it's just an amazing amount of content, like every day, like 10-minute video every single day. And so you kind of, if you've ever followed his stuff in the past or read his books or, you know, his newer YouTube stuff, I mean, I think you get a pretty clear feel for how he would be on TV. And I don't know. I think the judges it'll be good. What do you think?
Okay. Well, I pretty much see the panel as indicative of the problem of the show again.
Okay.
So it's good. We have a little contrast in our take on it here. I will say just out front, I have for a long time also been a fan of Gary Vaynerchuk. I guess over the years, I have come to think, maybe I have a slight tinge of like, well, he's just like oversimplifying the challenges of being successful, but I really admire his industriousness, you know, his kind of go-get-it attitude. I think he is a great entrepreneurial kind of coach and perfect judge for an entrepreneurial show.
Mm-hmm.
And I...
Which this actually is. Like they say apps, exactly. But this is actually starting
that's
a business.
Sort of, that's sort of what I'm getting at is that it's indicative of the fact that this isn't really about app making.
Right.
And in that sense, it offers less both in the way of something new and unique to the world. It's like you said, it's kind of a ripoff of other show structures, but it's also, it's like really a thinly, you already mentioned Shark Tank. It's like, what does it really add to Shark Tank except for like a few other gimmicky like mechanisms for the evaluation process and the limitation of the business ideas to apps?
Mm-hmm.
So from the point of view of somebody who's interested in apps and in making apps as a craft, so going back again to the baking comparison or to the fashion design comparison, the judges on the baking show are world-class professional bakers who are revered by probably everybody in their field. The judges on the Project Runway shows are fashion designers and fashion magazine like editors, mm-hmm. people who are revered within that industry.
Yeah, and I would throw out like cooking shows usually, you know, master chefs of some kind.
Yes, right.
As the judges.
So putting together a show that glorifies app development, to me personally, I wouldn't go to Gwyneth Paltrow or, you know, or Will.i.am or Jessica Alba, or frankly, even Gary Vaynerchuk to have an opinion about apps that merits much attention. Like these four mm-hmm. individuals are, I think, each brilliant geniuses in their own way. They've all had successful enterprises. I'm sure they have a lot of great advice from a business point of view, but you could pick four other people 1,000 times and they would be the exact same impact on the show.
Hmm.
You could shuffle the deck of thousands of successful business entrepreneurs in the world and come up with four people who would ring about as appropriate for this show as these four people do.
Interesting.
And I think Gary Vaynerchuk is probably the most uniquely sort of appropriate in the sense of it being an entrepreneurial show. But I don't see much. I mean, I think that the other three are personalities. And like I said, I think they're brilliant and have their own business success and their own advice to convey, but it doesn't make the show it doesn't make the show special.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like if you had, it's not like if you had, I'm struggling to come up with, you know, specific names, but like Dan Bricklin, for example,
right.
You know, the inventor of the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
You could have people who have a personality and are also deeply invested in the craft that you're supposed to be celebrating and are brilliant and have business successes behind them. You know, mm-hmm. there's people who what if they got Bill Gates to do this? I mean, it seems like a long shot, but he would be an example. He would be an example, at least, of somebody. Maybe they pull Scott Forstall out of retirement. he would be appropriate, you know?
Yeah. Hey,
there's a lot.
I think you and I would be pretty good at this. Not we, famous, but
well, we would be.
We need to start. We need to start a show.
The thing is, I do think you and I would be pretty good at this. It would be more appropriate in the same way that there's like all these like great chefs who are not famous, who wouldn't be the best choice for a chef reality show. The sweet spot is you find somebody who is both a brilliant, accomplished software developer and has some level of charisma and fame, then you put them on the show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean,
they don't have to be well known. They don't have to be, I mean, a little well known, but like not.
Right.
Like, it's the kind of person that's really popular within a certain community, or they have a certain following, but they're not well known. And I guess you could say that maybe with some of these judges, but you don't need a superstar to fit this role.
Well, yeah. So like other names coming to my, like, and some of these are just old guys, right? So I don't want to just say it should only be old white guys, but
yeah,
like Mitch Kapoor founded Lotus. From the Apple point of view, somebody like Jean-Louis Gasset.
Oh yeah. That'd be good.
You know,
folks like Dave Weiner or something. Yeah, people with like a good personality
and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate again. I just want to emphasize it's unfortunate we're only coming up with old white guys.
Yeah, that is pretty sad.
But, you know, there are a lot of people who aren't old white guys that if we spent a little time thinking about this, I'm sure we would come up with a bunch of awesome lists of
Well, you can, executives, I mean, like Marissa Meyer and people that are well known in terms of leadership at companies, I think.
Yeah,
would fit this kind of role.
Well, hell, like this is an Apple production. Why isn't Bozema St. John one of the judges?
Yeah,
right.
These are all.
I mean, this would be perfect. Ideas.
Yeah. So you're right. I still think so. Here's why I think the judges are okay. Although I basically agree with, like, the your point is that. Your point is right. Like, I would prefer a lot of the people you mentioned. But I think the judges are okay because it's not about being an expert in the field. It's about being, like, motivation and encourage. You know, like, that's how I see this. And that's why I think Gary is great, because it's all about, you know, it's even in like the trailer clip, he's like, you know, this isn't whatever, this is work now. This is like, do it, go out, hustle, do that. You know, it's like that part of this role is encouraging them, saying, you got to work, you got to be better, we got to beat the other team, you know. And I think that these kind of personalities fit that, even if they don't necessarily have the kind of technical background. I guess I think the panel works. Again, getting back to kind of the two phases of the show, I think it works okay for that second phase of actually doing the work, even though I have big problems with that first pitch part and wish that they had scrapped it.
Yeah. But, you know, also just from a pure like technical point of view, some app maker is going to be like, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And everybody who's technical watching the show is going to be like, that's impossible. You can't do that. And every one of those four judges is going to say, sounds great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, and maybe they have technical editors on the sidelines who are going to prevent that kind of accident from happening. But, you know.
Well, also, hold on a second, though. Because, like, so the developer. So we don't know who the contestants are. My impression is that they are actually developers. Like, it's like a founder, co-founder kind of thing where one's a designer and one's a developer. So in other words, they're coming down the escalator, they know Objective-C and Swift or something, right?
Yep.
Or their co-founder knows how to code. And so I don't think it's not quite the same as someone coming on Shark Tank and not knowing how to build the product they just have the idea. And of course, it's a classic, like they overvalue the idea and think the idea is everything.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a little advantage here where hopefully there's an actual developer on the show and they're not going to say, well, what if we like do something crazy that's impossible on iOS, because they know the platform. If I'm wrong, if some of these contestants don't know how to code at all, then you do have a big problem because you don't have like a technical advisor that can guide them.
It's not about not knowing how to code at all. It's about the idea that these people should be pushing their skills. And if you're pushing your skills to try to excel and to win, then you're going to come up against areas that you're not as expertise in. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens when on the baking show, somebody's like, oh, well, I've never been forced figure out how to make a souffle without eggs.
Yeah.
And they're like, I think this will work. And so I don't know if it maybe the format won't have any challenges for the competitors. Maybe it won't have any technical challenges. In a sense, that's just like one other potential source of drama and interest that's then robbed from the format of the show. But you know, you know how it is. We're in chat groups, or the Core Intuition Slack channel. All of us, including people who have 20 or 30 years of experience, has to ask questions like, I'm thinking about doing it this way. Can anybody see any problems with that? And then inevitably, somebody will be like, yeah, trust me, I tried that. That doesn't scale. It's impossible. Unfortunately, cell networks aren't reliable enough to support that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, data storage is still going to cost you so much that that's not a successful business idea. You know? All these things that would be quick on the tongue of anybody who was a bona fide technologist are not going to be there for these judges. And these judges are going to be able to say things like, well, if you really want to please an audience, do something with a cute cartoon on it, you know? And I'm not trying to dumb them down. Like their sense of audiences and businesses are important. But they're just one little tiny part of the app making experience.
Sure. And then that's why a lot of successful companies are not just one person. They've got the designer and they've got the marketing person that has a good sense of what sells and what people want. And then they have the coder and they have, so yeah, you don't have some of that captured in the panel of judges. Yeah. It's maybe they'll bring in like technical experts kind of in the, they're kind of like how, I mean, I don't watch I've watched The Voice like once or twice. Not enough to really understand it, but I feel like a lot of the second part of the show is ripped off of The Voice, where you pick, you know, let's say two of the panel likes your app idea, and then you get to pick, no, I want Gary to like be my mentor and help me with this. And then later in the show, I think with The Voice, sometimes they'll bring in like famous singers and stuff to help out, or like American Idol, they did that, right? Like they bring in like other famous singers to help and like sing a song or whatever. Like, so they could do that here. Like they could say, like Gary said, okay, today, you know, we're bringing in Daniel Jalka to help you with he has some good tips on how to interface with your web services or something.
And that'll get the ratings up.
so they could do something like that, or I don't know, maybe even like bring back people that were voted off and could help. I don't know. They could find a way to get those technical, not exactly challenges, because we don't know if that's the format of the show, but like that technical kind of stuff to advance. I personally hope that technical challenges aren't part of the show, because I think that would be a huge waste of time for building. It's different with baking, where you are trying to become a better baker. This show is not about being a better developer. Maybe it should be, but it's not. It's about building a product. And so if you have all these little side challenges, like now build a Twitter client and now build a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but
it would be a distraction, I think.
No, but technical is such a broad term. And so like, for example, on Project Runway, the fashion design show, one of the key points of the show on that format is people are in the midst of making their you know, whatever their clothing item is, and in comes Tim Gunn, the fashion expert, and just kind of consults with each of them for a few minutes. So it's kind of like what you're suggesting, and it's like, but technical, you know, it's more like, I'm not really sure that color works with that color, mm-hmm. you know, or have you considered adding something with some contrast here? Mm-hmm. And frankly, even on that level of like UI design, none of these people who are judges have any chops.
Right. They would need to bring in, like, they need to bring in designers and developers to help. They need,
yes.
And also these judges are not, they're not sitting down with these app developers day after day forever. They're just coming in little quick bursts. And like if you watch Gary's, ever since I subscribed to YouTube Red, I've been like watching a lot of YouTube stuff because no ads, it just completely changes the experience. And I actually really like it. So I've been watching some of Gary's videos lately and this is all on his thing. Like he'll fly to LA and film Planet of the Apps, right? And they can't show it, but like he'll fly in for a day, talk to the developers and then fly out. And so you can't have a meaningful relationship, like really helping these people in short bursts like that. You've got to bring in other people. Like when the judge, the advisor's not there, you got to bring in designers and developers and other people to help them out. I think you'd have to.
Yeah. Well, we shall see, or at least you shall see. I'm not going to watch this filthy thing.
I'm gonna give it a chance. I have big problems with some of it, but I'm going to give it a chance because I'm just really curious. And I hope that some parts of the show will work.
Yeah.
Even though I would have done, especially the pitch and the escalator, I would have done that completely differently. But I think some parts of the show could work. I hope.
All right, folks, our second sponsor this week is our friends at Digimarc. With the Digimarc Discover SDK, your apps get the best mobile scanner of the most common traditional 1D barcodes. It's lightning fast, super reliable, and inexpensive. App users experience incredible scanning performance at varying distances, perspectives, with blur, glare, and challenging barcodes. None of this is a problem. No more fumbling or frustration. In addition to scanning the most common traditional 1D barcodes as well as QR codes, the Digimarc Discover Mobile SDK also future-proofs your apps with the exclusive capability to scan Digimarc barcodes. These are imperceptible codes used in product packaging, print, and audio media for delivering digital product information and content. So there's one software kit with unlimited possibilities. It's very cool stuff. Check it out at digimarc.com/mobile-sdk. Thanks to Digimarc for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, it's great to have Digimarc as a sponsor. I worked on an app, I mentioned this before on the show, for a client about a year ago, and it needed to scan QR codes. And if only I had had this at the time, just drop the SDK, the Digimarc SDK into your app, and everything's just quite a bit easier. It doesn't matter if you need to scan regular barcodes, QR codes, these invisible secret barcodes that you can put on posters and other things without making it look ugly with a barcode in the corner. The SDK will take care of it. I tried the SDK out in an app, and it's easy to integrate, and it's also really like it'll take care of the UI of things. So if you want to just pull up a view controller and have it take a picture and handle everything, it'll just deal with a lot of the things that you don't have to deal with. I think most people, when they're starting an app, they don't set out to say like barcodes are like their secret ingredient, like their most important thing that they need to put a lot of development resources into. But it's something you might need. Why not have an SDK that can just handle it for you so you don't have to deal with figuring out how that works and you can focus on the rest of your app. So thanks to Digimarc for sponsoring the show. You can learn more at digimarc.com/mobile-SDK. So Daniel, I mentioned I had seen some of the interview with Eddie Q and Ben Silverman, who was behind Planet of the Apps at the Code conference this week. I just saw the video of it. And there had some questions, both in the interview and also from the audience. And someone asked about Siri and the Echo and like why, basically the same old thing is like, why doesn't Apple have a cylinder in your kitchen that you can yell and talk to? And I thought we should follow up on this a little bit because we talked about it maybe a few weeks ago and kind of got into a debate about what's better and what company has the kind of best long-term vision and short-term kind of vision for mm-hmm. how this stuff should work. And also it made me think of you because Eddie Q's answer was very, very similar to what I think you said on the show, which is I have my phone with me everywhere. Like, why do I need something else.
Mm, did I say that?
something like that. You're the Apple talking points. That's what you.
I just regurgitate what Eddie Q tells me to say. Fanboy here. I don't remember saying that exactly. Sort of do agree with that. I think what I emphasized was how I was able to get a sort of cylinder like experience out of my iPhone just by like propping it up in the kitchen and yelling at it. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that I don't think the only reason I've sort of like questioned, I'm not just accepting this characterization of how I feel is because I really do think Apple should have a cylinder. I think most of our debate has been, whether we feel that fundamentally Alexa is doing a better job serving people than Siri is. And I think it's fair to summarize that you do feel like Alexa is doing a better job, at least in many of its use cases. and then, you know, recapping our debate, I have sort of felt like Alexa, and saying this with the caveat that I haven't used Alexa, but I have sort of felt like the number of things that Alexa helps
you do. Please
say
Echo
is,
so I don't have to beep all the...
Well, it doesn't invoke it, does it, if I'm not saying hey,
no,
does it?
There's no hey.
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to go back. Most people, usually it doesn't accidentally trigger.
Yeah,
but
here's another problem with Dingus, okay? Yeah. Here's another problem with the Amazon Dingus. I do like that convention that I think originated with Merlin Mann and John Gruber to just call it. Every podcast just calls it Dingus, whatever it is. And then until somebody comes out with, you know, until Apple actually comes out with it and it is called Dingus, it'll be safe. But no, I actually don't agree with the, I think it is a pretty weak response, if that's what Eddie Q said, that, well, what's the big deal? You have your phone with you. Because frankly, it's not convenient to take your phone out all the time. And that's where I kind of feel like I got a little bit of a Amazon type experience by putting my phone, you know, in the little holster, in the charger, and talking to it. Now, granted, it's not as good at listening to me from afar as I hear the Amazon product is, but I think basically the nut of our argument is you think Amazon has a huge advantage because they've been focusing on these sort of embedded, embedded locations where they quote unquote just work. And I feel like Apple can add that in a heartbeat whenever they feel like, and they'll be caught up instantly.
Right. So I would modify that slightly to say, I think Amazon has two advantages. One, they actually have the cylinder thing that sits in your kitchen or bedroom or living room or whatever, and has like, to your point, it's got a better mic. I mean, you can put a better microphone. I think it has multiple microphones, maybe. I mean, you can put a better microphone in something like that than you can in a really thin phone, right? So there's that, but there's also the extensibility is really important. And you know, this is a case where it's not about catching up, because I agree with you. If Apple came out with one of these devices tomorrow, they would be quote unquote caught up in terms of having better microphones, better speaker, you know, that sort of thing where you can talk to the room. But the extensibility is actually a fundamental difference in strategy. And so like Apple has rolled out however many, 6, 7, 8 different types of things you can extend Siri with. Whereas Amazon's approach is do whatever you want. We're not going to tell you you can only make something that integrates with maps or messaging, like just make whatever you want. Actually, as an example of that, just a couple days ago, I saw Amazon does a really good job of like every week they send you like, what can you do now? And I think Apple should actually do this. Every once in a while they do. I think with like the Super Bowl and things like that, they'll tell you, oh, you know, you could ask Siri about this stuff. I think they should do that more often so we know how Siri is improving. So every week or so Amazon sends one of these. And one of them, they talked about how Starbucks has a skill for the Echo now. as an example, like sometimes I'll go to Starbucks and you can use the Starbucks app. Like if you're about to leave your house and you don't want to wait in line at Starbucks and it's 5 minutes away, you can use the app to say, you know, I want an iced latte or whatever, and it'll be ready. And you just pick it up when you get there and you don't have to pay. You don't have to really talk to anyone or anything. You just pick it up and go. And so they have a thing with the Echo now where you can just say, if you always order the same drink, as you're leaving your house, you just tell the Echo, reorder my Starbucks thing, right? I don't know, whatever, however you phrase it. Mm-hmm. Tell Starbucks to, you know, start my order or something like that. And then it's like, okay. And then you leave and your order's ready. Like stuff like that, like you just can't, it's just impossible, right? Unless Apple at WWDC rolls out like hundreds of new types of things you can extend Siri with, it's going to be a hack to do anything like that.
Okay. A couple things. That seems like a really dumb thing to have an assistant. I don't know.
That's a perfect thing. Your assistant to tell your assistant to get your coffee ready.
It seems so fussy to have to say, like, you know, I don't like having to order when I get to Starbucks. So, hey, dingus, make sure my coffee's ready so I can save a minute. And then Starbucks is like, oh, whoops, they got caught in traffic, I guess. There's this cold latte here.
Well, hold on. Stop for a second. Go to a Starbucks next time.
No, thanks.
First of all, this is not a debate about, we're not okay. Coffee snobs. Right. We're not, I love to go to local hipster coffee shops. But like I go to Starbucks too. It's super convenient. Not super judgmental. Sometimes the coffee's no good. Sometimes it's fine. But my point is, if you go to a Starbucks right now,
yes,
like if you leave your house right now and go to a Starbucks, there mm-hmm. will be people using this. Like you will go to, when you go to get your coffee, there will be two cups of coffee waiting for someone to pick up and they're going to come in and get them. Like people use this, whether you think it's silly or not, people do it. And just so Echo, the Echo integration is just a way to hook into an existing app that people use.
Right? Okay. So, okay, I'll take that point then. And so let me just go to my real criticism, which is, does this work in Chinese at the Shanghai Starbucks?
Mm-hmm.
Does it work at the Indian Starbucks? Does it work at the Barcelona Starbucks? This kind of gets back at my other debate point, which is just giving Apple the benefit of the doubt that their slow and steady approach is part of their commitment to international support. And I can see how it would be a huge challenge to just open it up and say you can do anything, while at the same time ensuring international support. Because I think, I may be wrong, tell me, Manton, if you know I'm wrong, but I think along with the limited number of whatever Apple calls, you know, these abilities, forget what they call them, but you know, you can say like send a message via Dingus, or you know, hail a car with Dingus, and it knows about those things, right? I think that the rigidity of that system allows those to work to be localized easily,
right? And it's a little more flexible, and you can tell it to do messaging is a good example. You can tell it to send a message in different ways. And it usually works. Yeah, the domains and intents. I don't remember the exact terminology, but yeah.
So, I saw actually something interesting recently. It was somebody adding, I think it was maybe it was Federico on Mac Stories reviewing a product that lets you like send messages with Twitter. I think it was using SiriKit. So I guess it kind of comes down to like, what will Apple approve? Because could I say, make an app or could the Starbucks app for iOS support messages? And then I say, send a message to my Starbucks, one latte.
Right. No, I think, so I have thought about that with blogging too. And I actually was experimenting with that, not getting anything to the point of Apple reviewing it, but because I do think the messaging is the most useful way that Siri can be extended, because you could really do some interesting things with it. And yeah. But do we know if Apple will approve that kind of stuff? We don't really know. It's yeah. possible they could say that's not really text messaging, you're cheating. But right. I think that there's a lot of potential, and that's why I'm frustrated, right? Because look, I mean, just hacking that one Siri messaging hook, like, you could do some really interesting things. What if you didn't have to hack it? What if you could just do it? What if you could just build new extensions on Siri?
Yeah.
And yeah, there are issues. Yeah, localization and working in other countries and the flexibility of, like, what order you put the words in. Yeah, those are issues. But, like, those are solvable, I think.
Are they? I mean, yeah. I think that's what I keep getting back to, is trying to see things through Apple's eyes. And I believe if you look through this situation, this scenario, through Apple's eyes, any solution that you can't boast about to the Chinese market is not a solution, right? You look at it from Apple's eyes. You look at it from Amazon's eyes. Amazon's eyes is like, if we can brag about it to Americans, we win, right? Like, for the most part. I know they're expanding slowly, but if they can say, look at this, American Starbucks customers, you can use your Amazon product to easily order a latte. That's a big win for Amazon. And it's understandable why a bunch of Americans would celebrate that and say, Siri sucks, Amazon is great. But the vast majority of people in the world don't care about that. And Apple is just playing in a different league when it comes to that. Like, Apple has to be as interested, if not more interested, in the international market than in the American market, even though it's an American company, even though a lot of their design is tinged with American biases. They have to be looking at the vast majority of their users, their customer base, who are absolutely not going to benefit if solutions spring up that are English only or biased towards English implementation. So the fact that a clever hack could come up that says, you know, hey, Dingus, get me a latte, and it might work on an iPhone, that doesn't interest Apple from a long-term planning and, like, business development point of view, unless they can say, they can brag that it's going to work in China, Japan, India, et cetera.
Well, hold on. But, like, imagine if... So not all iOS apps are localized, right?
No.
In fact, most aren't, probably.
Yes.
And there are pros and cons. It's a cost to localize and to maintain your app when it's localized. So small developers sometimes can't keep up with it. You wouldn't say, I don't think you would say, if your app is not localized, you can't sell it outside of the US, would you?
No.
Okay. So absolutely. What's the difference? Because, like, the way I look at it, these Siri things, I mean, they're apps, really. That's like, if Siri was a platform, which I think it should be, then when you extend Siri, you're making an app.
Yeah.
And just because it doesn't work in China doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to make it. That's kind of the way I look at it. And I mean, it would be great if you could build off these platforms and they would work and be seamless in lots of languages. But just because they might not be, I don't think you should say, don't even bother. Don't even, because I mean, and even like the Starbucks skill, I think, is a good example. It's not very flexible. Like, you do have to be pretty specific about how you set. You can't say, oh, you know, I think I'll have, you know, a cappuccino today. Can you order it for me or whatever? you have to say, like, reorder the thing I have as my favorite thing, right? It's like there's a specific way you have to say it. Right. It's inflexible. Yeah, that's a limitation. But at least you can do it. Like, at least it's a... You know, it's something that's possible.
I just think it's below the level of Apple's interest to serve these kind of, like, gimmicky, cute little things. And I know I'm being dismissive, and I can sense, Manton, you're gearing up over there. But I'm sort of saying it that way on purpose to emphasize that Apple's got like bigger fish to fry. And yes, that does mean that in the short term, we lose out because we can't say, "Dingus, get me a latte." But I just think, like, you're right. Every app doesn't need to be localized to be valuable and to be a success and to be something that's worthwhile. But every one of Apple's apps does. Apple's not going to waste time investing in most of their stuff. They're not going to waste time investing in. You know, there's some examples. Like, obviously, asking for baseball scores is a very American-centric thing. But I think that that's using a mechanism of Siri that they definitely intend to be international in the sense that, like, now you can ask for cricket scores, right? It's like,
right,
it's not designed as an American only experience or an English only experience. And so I don't think Apple should, I get what you're saying. Like, I don't think Apple should go out of their way to restrict people from making, you know, geocentric sort of biased products, but I also can see why Apple isn't going out of their way to invest heavily in promoting technologies that are inherently limited that way. And so I think maybe it will be the case that we'll get 50 new intents for Siri at WWDC. I'm not counting on that, but I think if you look at the long down the road, if you look at the long road and we end up with like a latte intent, then it's going to be a win for Apple when it works in China. And when Amazon's doesn't work in China because they let everybody do their own like freewheeling solution. And then it's down to whether every single one of the apps handles it right. So it's down to whether Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, I don't know, Arby's, whatever, all do like fast food intents correctly for every single locale in the world, then Apple's going to be looking pretty smart when they took their time. And maybe it's 2-3 years from now, but there's like a fast food intent that lets you like universally ask for items and they're ready at your local favorite restaurant, then they won't be looking so dumb.
Well, so I think that the nice thing about all this is that Apple could also, they could add 50 more Siri kit domains, intents, whatever you call them. And they could also add an other, which is like go crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to, if they do that, I'm on board. Like, because that's the best of both worlds. That's very structured queries that you can do with Siri, and it's flexible, and Siri kit knows what you're trying to do. And so like if they had the fast food one, it would know things about menus and it would be, but as long as you have that other, it's like, go crazy, do whatever you want. I'm happy. But my problem is that I don't think they want the other. Mm-hmm. And like you just said a minute ago, like in the short term, it's more limited. If they don't want the other category, if they have this fundamental difference about how this stuff should work, it doesn't matter if they add 50 new things. It doesn't matter if they have 100. They'll never have everything. I mean, I just looked at Amazon's website and the skills. It shows like what's the new skills, and it highlights the Starbucks one I talked about, highlights a pizza ordering thing. And then you can also filter like show me skills that I guess have been updated in the last 90 days. There's 4,000 Amazon skills in the last 90 days. I mean, there's no way Apple's going to add 4,000 Siri kit domains. Like it's completely unfeasible, right? So at some point they either need to let go of this idea and just make it extensible, or they'll never have a platform that's more open. And so if they never want a platform that's more open, like I can't really get behind it, right?
I guess so, but this is Apple, you know, and it's like iOS is a closed system, and it comes with all the caveats that accord with that, and it comes with all the benefits that come out of that. You know, like it does, there are infinite number of apps that cannot be developed and deployed to iOS. And a lot of those apps exist on Android, for example. apps that are impossible on iOS and exist on Android, and yet you and I and millions of other people in this world pay a premium price for an iPhone, in spite of what is frankly like a philosophical, it's a philosophical problem that you are fundamentally in opposition to. Mm-hmm. And yet you're still preferring the Apple product, right? Because there's some rhyme or reason to it that ends up making it a better product in spite of, or perhaps because of, that philosophical line in the sand.
Absolutely. And I've had posts about this before on my blog, where when I was really frustrated with the App Store and the limitations of not being able to sell outside the App Store for doing iOS development. And I always come back to that key point, which is, well, I'm not going to go to Android. Like, the iPhone is the best phone, in my opinion. And so I can have these philosophical differences, but I still want to use the best product. I think Apple has it.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the best product with voice. Like, maybe they're tied, maybe they're behind, maybe they're a little ahead, but I don't think they have, I don't think they clearly have the best product. And so that's why I'm not really willing to give them a pass on the extensibility part, but we'll see. I mean, it's possible, you know, you said 2-3 years, it's possible that this is going to take a little while to play out and we won't know who quote unquote wins for a little while.
Well, you know, Manton, you and I are two white American men. We have a benefit of an audience that is much more diverse than you or I is. So actually, I would welcome folks chime in on the Slack on our chat.corent.org or drop us a message at Corent on Twitter. Let us know from an international point of view, particularly, what you think about this, because I'm sort of speculating that Siri either is already superior product internationally or that it's poised to become one. And I would be interested to know whether that rings true to folks who are looking at this from outside the American bubble, you know? because I get it. I get why people are excited about Echo. And I do, just to get back to it, I think Eddie Q's comments, as you relayed them, it's kind of like when Steve Jobs was like, nobody would ever want to watch video on an iPhone or on an iPod.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, it just rings hollow to me. Like, well, we don't really think people need to be able to talk into a room because everyone already has their iPhone. The prevalence of things like the watch actually sort of support that a little bit, because I said earlier, nobody wants to get out their iPhone. The fact is, like, the watch, if it's always listening, and for instance, I could say, hey, dingus to my watch and not have to raise it and not have it be delayed or slow or anything. There is some logic to the idea that, you know, especially for a lot of use cases, you don't want your dingus in the room that you happen to be in if it can just be on you at all times. Especially because I can come over to your house now, Manton, and I can say, hey, dingus, get me 10 lattes. And then suddenly there's 10 lattes that you paid for sitting on the counter at Starbucks.
Right.
And you're out 10 lattes worth of money. I mean, there's something kind of like fundamentally wrong with that whole combination of room devices being tied to personal assistance. So I can see how there's something to that Eddie Q attitude, like that, no, your personal assistant should just go with you. On the other hand, I can see that people have benefited so much from having room devices just sort of be there and reliable. I think there's room for both, but I do think that there are a lot of like kind of like classic failures of a room device being tied to your personal preferences, because the room device is supposed to serve ostensibly many people. And then there's, of course, the challenges of you don't want to have to get your phone out of your pocket. So hopefully Apple will find a clever way that's a little bit more inspiring than their innovation in the reality TV market to get into the so-called cylinder, as you put it. I'm still pretty, as is probably completely obvious, I'm still pretty optimistic about Siri. And I think they're gonna give Amazon a global run for their money, if not, you know, an American one as well.
All right. Well, good talking to you this week, Daniel. Thanks everyone for listening to the show. And like Daniel said, it's at chat.corrent.org if you want to join the Slack and chime in. And I mean, for the record, I agree internationally, like Amazon has catching up to do. So like, if someone says that Siri is better in China than the Echo that doesn't exist in China, like I won't argue with you. And of course, we have the jobs board too, jobs.corrent.org. If you're looking for a Mac, iOS job, or looking to hire somebody, check it out. And we'll talk to you next week.
See you then.